Good morning. It's 8:06. This is Local News Hour. I'm Grace Dorfler filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. On the phone with us from the ABC4 Meteorology Center is Cedric Haynes. Cedric, how's the weather?
Hey, good morning. I'll tell you what. Well, it's starting off on a chilly note out there with temperatures in the upper 20s and lower 30s, but we will see a nice rebound as we go throughout the day. We'll call it partly cloudy skies as we move throughout the day with a few extra clouds building in from the south. We'll see our high temperatures climbing into the upper 60s there in the Heber Valley. So a pretty nice afternoon with those temperatures. And then for Park City, not too bad as well, with high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 60s across the area. Tonight, we'll keep with the partly cloudy skies. We'll see our overnight lows dropping down into the upper 30s in the Heber Valley, and we'll be in the low 40s for Park City. As we move throughout your forecast on your Wednesday, we're looking at mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. Now, as we get into your Wednesday afternoon, we're going to see a little better chance of a few isolated showers and downpours developing. It'll still be widely scattered, but there will be that better chance developing into the afternoon and evening hours on your Wednesday as high temperatures climb into the lower 60s again for Park City, and we'll see those high temperatures right around 70 in the Heber Valley. Then we start to see bigger changes as a strong cold front will move through the area as we go into your Wednesday night and the Thursday morning. For the Heber Valley, that's going to mean we're going to be seeing rain showers continuing on throughout the day on Thursday. By the time we get towards Thursday afternoon, though, we're going to see those temperatures falling a little bit from the low 50s down into the upper 30s, and that could mean the chance of a little bit of rain mixed with snow shower activity as we go into your Thursday afternoon. By Thursday night, we'll likely see colder air as temperatures drop down into the upper 20s overnight Thursday, meaning that those rain showers will change over to all snow showers Thursday night into early Friday morning. And we'll have those snow showers off and on throughout the day on Friday, believe it or not, with high temperatures only in the mid 40s. So get ready for a big change there. And we could see those snow showers continuing off and on throughout your Friday night into Saturday as well in the Heber Valley. And that means we could see some light accumulations. We're talking probably around a half inch to an inch, but still, considering what we're seeing out there today and tomorrow, that will be a big change. For our friends in Park City, it's a different story. We're going to be looking at those snow showers likely throughout the day on your Thursday with highs in the mid 40s, and those snow showers will continue into your Friday with highs only around 40 degrees with overnight lows in the 20s. So we could see several inches of snow there around Park City as we get into your Thursday evening into Friday morning. So keep that in mind if you're going to be traveling over some of those passes and canyons as we go throughout that time frame. But as we get towards the weekend, here's the good news. We start to dry things out as we go into your Saturday. And I think Easter Sunday right now is looking primarily dry across the area. We'll call it mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. And we'll see those high temperatures back into the low 50s there in the Park City area, with high temperatures back into the upper 50s to near 60 in the Heber Valley. So that'll be some great news. Easter Sunday should be good, but we could have another storm system that could bring us another chance of a few rain and snow showers for the beginning of next week. So we're kind of going on the up the next few days with spring-like temperatures, but winter-like changes arrive for the end of the week.
Thank you so much for that outlook, Cedric.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
Coming up on Local News Hour today, first, we've got Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. He has a preview of this week's County Council meeting. And then we have the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City, that's Steve Richardson. He'll share some program updates. Finally, we've got the General Manager of Recycle Utah, Jim Bedell. He has an update on the search for a location for Recycle Utah's new home. Taking a look at the local news, attorneys for Vail Resorts will ask an appeals court to reverse a Park City Planning Board's decision that blocked the installation of two high-speed chairlifts. That appeals court hearing is happening today. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
After a season of long lift lines and customer complaints, Park City Mountain sought to upgrade its Eagle and Silver Load chairlifts on the Mountain Village side of the resort in 2022. An application for upgrades was initially approved administratively by Park City's planning director at the time. The Planning Commission reversed the decision on appeal, siding with residents who claimed the upgrades weren't allowed under the terms in the resort's 1998 development agreement. That sent a high-speed 8-pack off to Whistler Blackcomb in Canada for installation and Vail to Utah's 3rd District Court, where it sued the city over the decision in 2023 and lost. On Tuesday, a panel of judges from the Utah Court of Appeals will hear arguments in the case from attorneys for the resort, the city, and residents. The hearing is set for 9:30 a.m. at the Matheson Courthouse in Salt Lake City. Vail's failed effort to upgrade its lifts came after the 2021-22 winter, when the resort was plagued by poor snowfall, low staffing levels, and a 47% increase in Epic Pass sales. Vail Resorts later said in an earnings report that the stalled project cost the company millions. At the district court, attorneys for Vail argued its mountain development agreement, which outlines future lift improvements, should be viewed as a dynamic roadmap, not an exact blueprint. The Planning Commission, the lawyers argued, acted outside its scope, and therefore its decision to grant the residents' appeal was arbitrary and illegal. The primary argument from residents is that Park City Mountain is exceeding its comfortable carrying capacity, or CCC, which is a metric outlined in the resort's development agreement representing the number of visitors that can be accommodated at any given time. Lawyers for Park City claimed the proposed Eagle Lift upgrade didn't align with plans set forth in the 1998 development agreement. The city also argued that Park City Mountain did not provide an adequate plan to mitigate the parking impacts, a requirement for the lift upgrades. Vail says expert evidence suggests new lifts don't translate to increased parking demand. But 3rd District Court Judge Richard Morozik said the commission was presented evidence at the time that raised reasonable questions about the validity of the parking plan. Morozik said that gave the commission reason to be skeptical of the planning director's initial approval. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And Francis residents have taken their fight against hotels on State Route 32 to 3rd District Court. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the city has permitted numerous businesses in its growing town center.
Homeowners in the Village at Lambert Lane have appealed Francis City's decision to greenlight a Best Western. The 15-home neighborhood is directly behind where the hotel will go on the northwest corner of State Route 32 and Lambert. The residents are appealing because they say the hotel will disturb them and nearby wetlands. City code states facilities that require late-night customers and activities shall be located away from residential areas to reasonably prevent disruption of privacy. Village at Lambert Lane, which is adjacent to the hotel property, says the council should have denied Best Western for not being, quote, away from the neighborhood. Before the city council approved it last month, Francis's attorney said away from was unenforceable because it wasn't objectively measurable. Council members still required a 50-foot buffer between the hotel and the residential property line. Residents want 3rd District Judge Richard Mrozek to overturn that decision. They also raise concerns that the development will disturb the wetlands that cross both the hotelier's property and their own. In a promotional video for the commercial center, developer Wes Harwood says he's worked with the Army Corps of Engineers to follow wetlands regulations. The residents' appeal asks the court to consider not federal law but city code, which prohibits disturbing, quote, significant wetlands. Francis City has yet to file a reply in 3rd District Court, and a hearing hasn't been scheduled. The Best Western is one of two hotels residents have recently protested. The City Council approved the other hotel, which will be at the center of town, April 10th. But developer Rusty Webster will need to redesign it. The unnamed hotel got its permit 4-1. The council denied its architectural plans 3-2. City planner Katie Hinews says that's partly because the city council didn't think the plans complied with the three-story limit in the city center zone. She told KPCW in an email the applicant claimed the previously planned fourth story would become an attic and it would be done in accordance with building codes, but the updated plans submitted showed balconies on the attic or fourth story and the interior plans showed walls and doors. Webster had asked for a code change allowing four stories, but the city denied it. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And Utahns will participate in Earthquake Drills at Work, School, or Home during the 2025 Great Utah Shakeout Thursday. So far, more than 930,000 people are registered for the drill, including students and staff at Ecker Hill Middle School, Trailside Elementary, and South Summit High School in Summit County. Utah Department of Public Safety's Be Ready Utah expert Brian Stinson says the annual drill teaches people what to do in the event of an earthquake. Stinson says the most important thing to do is to drop onto your hands and knees, cover your head and neck with one arm and hand, and hold on until the shaking stops. The statewide drill will be at 10:15 a.m. on a Thursday. Summit County's main landfill is expanding this year. Officials say the project will extend the landfill's life by a decade, as KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
Solid Waste Superintendent Tim Loveday says the county signed a $2.35 million contract with Cedar City-based Perco Rock last week. The firm will build a new cell, double the size of the old one, at the Three Mile Canyon landfill above Rockport Reservoir. Cells are the holes where the garbage goes, and they're lined to protect soils and groundwater. The first cell ran out of space last year, sooner than expected because of a spike in waste during COVID-19. Loveday has been able to switch to the older section of the landfill as a stopgap. He says cell number two will last about a decade.
It's beside cell one, so it'll let us build up over onto cell one, and we'll gain a few more years of life out of cell one because we put the two cells together. So we're looking at anywhere from 12 to 14 years, depending on what our waste stream actually is in the future.
The new cell's $3.25 million price tag is under the $3 million budgeted, Loveday says. County Public Works built the access road to the new dump area in-house, which he says saved some money.
Our long-term design would take us out to five cells, and that would give us in total about another 30 years of life. But it really depends on how much we're able to excavate. Even on cell two, I hedge just a little bit on the numbers because we don't know how much dirt we're actually going to be able to dig out.
He says Perco will break ground this summer and must finish the excavation by October 31st. After that, the county will seek final environmental permitting from the state and could begin filling cell two next spring. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW, and I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the former Park City School District Chief Operating Officer will receive a severance package worth almost $176,000, including $78,500 for alleged emotional distress. KPCW's Christine Weller has more.
The school district created the Chief Operating Officer position in 2019 and hired Michael Tanner, who held the role for nearly 6 years. The district announced April 3rd it had eliminated its COO position to reduce administrative overhead costs. According to a separation agreement obtained by KPCW through a public records request, Tanner was on administrative leave from February 25th until the COO position was officially eliminated March 31st. According to the state auditor's website, Transparent Utah, for the 2024 to 25 fiscal year, Tanner will have received more than $249,000 in wages and over $108,000 in benefits, totaling over $357,000. Part of his compensation included a special assignment contract for district-level safety and security issues, duties that were already included in the COO job description. Tanner's total severance package, which includes unused paid time off, is almost $176,000, the separation agreement shows. The district split a one-time lump sum payout into three parts: $78,500 for wages, another $78,500 for alleged emotional distress, liquidated and/or other non-wage damages, and nearly $4,000 for attorney fees. The district will also pay Tanner almost $15,000 for health insurance or a health savings account. The district has now divided the previous COO responsibilities among other administrators. The agreement states Tanner will be available through June 30th to assist in the transition. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, joining us in the studio, we have Steve Richardson. He's the executive director of the Christian Center of Park City, and he's here to share some updates on the programs. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How's it going, Grace?
So far, so good. How about yourself?
Oh, it's the best Tuesday I've had all week.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Well, let's hear what's going on at the Christian Center.
So we got a lot going on right now. I mean, first of all, it's Holy Week. So for a lot of people, this is a really special week. It is for us, too. We celebrate Holy Week in a way that I've just never seen before, but it really makes sense for Summit County and for the Christian Center. We celebrate Holy Week with Easter baskets. So we've collected 1,600 Easter baskets, which is a record for us. It's the most we've had in 25 years. And we've gone out on little mobile food pantries to deliver food and to deliver Easter baskets. Some of the kids in the more needier neighborhoods and some of the low-income housing areas around Summit County. We've done it in Colville and Camas. We've tried to get the Easter baskets to the kids that could really be blessed by it to show them that we love them and God loves them. So it's been a wonderful way of connecting Easter and God's love with a real practical way of just giving them something that really means a lot to these kids. So it's been great. And of course, we decorated our entire lobby with Easter baskets. We had about 1,000 in there. So if you look at our website, you can see pictures of just surrounded by Easter baskets. It's been a blast.
That sounds festive. Awesome. You yeah. mentioned the mobile food pantry. So I want to hear a little bit more about that. It seems like you're kind of growing that presence.
We are. So we have the emergency mobile food pantries that we started back in February, and we did a few of them every couple weeks just to space them out. They were really low key, just going in there and bringing food. Nothing else, really, just bringing food. And then starting at the end of May, we're going to kick off our full blown mobile food pantries. That's when we invite all the other nonprofits, anybody who wants to join us, and we go and set up a space in one of the low-income housing project areas and just love them as people deserve to be loved, you know, to show the respect and value. So we'll bring out the games. We'll hopefully invite some others that have fun things to do and be able to support people with the idea of just we love them more than we could possibly imagine.
Awesome. That's great to hear. And could you give an update on where those mobile food pantries go in the area?
So we have a little bit of a schedule actually on the website, at least of when they are. There are a number of trailer home areas. There are a number of apartment buildings, and we try not to advertise too much exactly where they're going because we want it to be a little bit of a joy that the people there know, and then the volunteers are able to get involved and be a part of it. So we've worked with the managers of these different apartment buildings and with some of the nonprofits that have set up these areas, and we make sure that we're bringing the food to exactly the people that need it. And that's our call. That's our goal, is to transform lives. So we want to make sure we're actually making a difference in somebody's life, not just bringing them a meal, but bringing them hope.
Mm-hmm. That's, well, the two, I think, usually go hand in hand.
They often do. I hope so.
Yeah. What are you seeing in terms of, I feel like we've reported that, you know, the need, or I guess the demand for these services just keeps growing. Is that something you're continuing to see?
It does. I heard yesterday that we're up 92% over last year.
Wow.
So it has
nearly
been
doubled.
Yeah. We had saw in the very first part of the year, we started seeing a little bit of a drop. And then we switched our focus to bringing food to people who need it. And now those people know that we're just here to care. And we're seeing an increase in both our static food pantries and our mobile food pantries across all of our services of people that really need to know that people care about them and really need help. And we're glad that we're able to help them.
Great to hear. I want to, I guess, switch topics a little bit. We were talking with another community partner, Holy Cross Ministries, and they're running into some challenges with the changes in federal funding and some of the new policies, especially with, you know, reaching immigrants or reaching folks who might not have legal status.
Yes.
Doing their citizenship programs. Is that a challenge that your organization is running into as well?
Yes and no. So, yes, there are limitations on state funding. We don't do federal funding at the Christian Center. We only focus on state funding. So a little bit of limitations, but it's allowed us to figure out new ways to connect with donors and say, hey, here's a way you can directly give to those who are in need. And our donors have really wanted to be a part of it. So we have a few people that have said, hey, if the state can't provide, then we want to provide. And I know there are more out there that are saying if the state can't do it or if there's limitations, we want to show people that we care about them and we love them. We live in one of the most loving, caring communities that I've ever seen in my 27 moves. And I know there are other people that just want to show that people are loved.
Well, 27 moves. That's an interview for another day. But I guess quite apart from like funding concerns, just in terms of how people are responding to the new environment, are you seeing any drop-offs in the number of folks coming to the center?
So there were at first. Mm-hmm. In January, I actually was here talking about how there was a drop in people actually attending. That's why we kicked up the food pantries in February. Usually we wait till June. We did a whole lot earlier this year and really just brought the food to people's door to try to make sure that there weren't any barriers to a healthy meal. But we have seen people develop trust. And as you know, trust is based on action. That trust isn't just a belief in somebody. Trust is seeing their actions, saying, I can verify this individual or this group is truly trustworthy, and so I choose to trust them. And so we have tried to demonstrate in every way that we can to every single person, from the donors to the customers of the thrift stores to the people who feel most vulnerable, that we want to demonstrate that we're trustworthy. And the more we can demonstrate that we're trustworthy, the more likely people are to trust us. And we have seen that happen, that some of those people who were nervous about coming out are coming back and saying, yes, I trust you. You really are here just to love and care for me.
Mm-hmm. And that mission transcends political administrations or anything else.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask you about another one of the programs that the CCPC does. I saw you guys posted about registration coming up end of the month for Back to School Basics.
Back to School Basics, yes.
For listeners who might not be familiar, what is the program?
So it's absolutely amazing. It's one of the coolest things to donate to and be a part of. What it is we have about between 1,500 and 1,700 kids that are going to sign up for it. And we are getting collections and donations from donors and from people in the community. We try to buy every single kid a new backpack or a backpack that's really nice. We get new school supplies in that backpack. And then one of the most unique part is we give them a $100 gift card to spend at the outlets. I know they have different names now, but we still call them the outlets. And they can use that money on school supplies at any one of the stores there. And of course, we have Summit Exchange. Our newest store is in the outlets. It's an amazing place to shop, but there's a lot of great places to shop there. And we want every kid to feel proud as they go into school with their new pair of kicks or their new shirt or pants and saying, yeah, I feel good. I feel like I belong. I feel like I am valuable. And so giving them that $100 gift card and letting them shop for new school clothes is a way of showing value, showing our value for them and God's value for them. And we know it's going to make a huge difference. So backpack, school supplies, and a gift card for every single kid who comes in.
That's great to hear. And when and where can families sign up?
So we have a sign up in Wasatch County and in Summit County on the 28th, I believe, and then the 1st of May. And so they're on our websites to see exactly where to sign up and what the requirements are. And then they just go up and sign up.
Nice.
Keep it simple.
Good to know. So I guess people should go to your website to get more information on that.
As always,
yeah.
The website's always a great place for any organization. We want to keep people in touch, and we try to update our website a lot lately. We got new things happening continually, and so we'd love to push people to that website, whether it's for counseling, for neurofeedback, for the thrift stores, for the food pantries, or for some of the great programs we do. The website's always going to give the best information possible.
Awesome. Last program I wanted to ask you about, I saw you guys had a Go Shoot Ski Day, part of your Indigenous Youth program.
We did.
I'm not too familiar with that. Can you tell me a little more?
So the Go Shoot tribe is about an hour and a half south of Wendover. So it's really about the only static caregiving that we do outside of Summit County and Wasatch County. We are focused on our two counties. We are a local nonprofit. We are just here to care. But we found out about the Ghost Shoot Tribe many years ago, and they really didn't have any organization that was supporting them. And so we reached out to them. We got some funding. American Express has been kind for us, but others have really helped. We run a food pantry on the Ghost Shoot Reservation, the Ghost Shoot Tribe area. And so I always ask people, how many food pantries does the Christian Center have? And it's actually four. We got the mobile food pantry, we got Wasatch, we got Summit, and then we run the Go Shoot Tribe as well. And we realized that food wasn't enough, that we really wanted to transform lives. That's our phrase this year for our 25th anniversary, is transforming lives as an expression of God's love. And so we wanted to transform their lives, and the way we could do that was especially to reach out to the kids. So every year we bring children and the parents over to Park City. We put them up at a hotel. We partner with some other organizations as well, help get them up on the ski slopes, allow them to experience some of the joys of Park City. I've heard that their favorite thing actually is just the swimming pool at the hotel. They're still kids. And do that. We also do a service project for them. We also often do a camping trip or hiking trip, just something to show the kids that they are loved, they are valuable, that they really are special, and they really are important. And so this is one way that we do it.
Well, it sounds like it was a really fun day for everybody.
I think so. Yeah. They seemed very, very happy. And so were our volunteers, of course, just being able to love on them.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like lots going on at the CCPC.
Yes.
Anything else you want to add this morning, Steve?
So the 6th of September is our Hike to Hunger. Hike to Hunger has been a main community enrichment event that we do every year just for the community, for anybody to be a part of. The last few years, it's gotten a little bit smaller, and we tried to focus on, okay, can we sustain it? This year, we don't care about sustainability at all. It's our 25th anniversary, so we're doing the biggest Hike for Hunger we could possibly do. So if you're out there listening, the 6th of September, it's going to be in the Utah Olympic Park. It's going to have all the activities. It's going to have great food, great activities, great music, just an amazing atmosphere of bringing the community together. Mark it on your calendar. Now it's going to be wonderful, and we're really hoping everybody will be able to be a part of it.
Awesome. Good to hear. Well, mark your calendars, everybody. We've been talking with the CCPC Executive Director, Steve Richardson. Steve, thank you so much.
Thanks, Grace. It's great to talk to you.
You too. Well, on the phone with us with an update on Wasatch County, we've got County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Dustin, good morning.
Good morning, Grace.
Well, Dustin, there's a lot going on in Wasatch County these days. I want to start with a topic that's a big one for the county, the Heber Valley Bypass. We all heard an update from UDOT last week about some new route announcements. What's the county's take on the two routes that are left on the table, one through the North Fields, one along North 40?
I think overall the council's been really consistent in wanting UDOT to continue to explore the options that kind of maintain the historic planned alignment of the bypass. We haven't had a lot of detailed, robust discussion about it. I think most of it is just an extreme desire to maintain the rural character of the North Fields and doing as much as we can to preserve that open space, that green space, and the agricultural activities that take place there.
Mm-hmm. So, it's a hot topic in the county. Have you heard many comments from residents about their thoughts on what UDOT's narrowed it down to?
I have not heard a whole lot yet. I think it's still pretty new and still kind of percolating out into the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, certainly as the process continues, I think there will be a lot more opportunities for public comment and public feedback. As far as the county goes and the county council, is there any preference that you'll advocate for to UDOT?
You know, we haven't discussed yet making any official statements. I think we anticipate that the open public comment period following the draft EIS release later this year might end up being the most opportune time to provide that feedback.
Mm-hmm. And for listeners, that EIS is expected sometime in late fall, so that's when we're kind of expecting the next big milestone in this bypass process, I believe. In the meantime, you mentioned the North Field. Certainly open space is a big concern for the county. We've heard that the 2018 open space bond has been all allocated. Do you think there's appetite for a new open space bond? What's the county's thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's been discussions at both the Open Lands Board and the Wasatch County Council. The funding landscape has changed a little bit in that there is a bill this year that would impact the way that rollback taxes are used so that the county would be receiving significantly more funds to use for open space preservation. So I think it's still under evaluation right now whether or not voters would be asked to consider this. There are I think a number of attributes or features that may affect the council's decision, but it hasn't been made, and I think right now they're leaning towards not putting it on the ballot as it stands right now.
Okay, understood. And what open space projects are still in the works that people should keep an eye out for updates on?
So the ones that are most imminent are the Mitchell-Kissel property that is kind of along River Road, just as you head north out of Midway. And we have the Allen Giles property that's in the North Fields. Both of those are really close to closing and locking those properties up, preserving them in just the ways that we talked about. There are a few others that are kind of further out on the horizon, the Holmes property and the Pear Tree Llama property. In the east and west parts of the valley, respectively, that are both, I think, on a great track, but still will take a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly not a quick process necessarily. Switching topics a little bit, I wanted to chat with you about e-bikes. That was a topic at the most recent interlocal meeting with the Heber City Council and the Midway City Council. It sounds like you're trying to get some comprehensive rules in place for the whole Heber Valley. What are the council's next steps on that?
So we're discussing it as staff, kind of a cross-jurisdictional discussion. We have a regional planners meeting where planning staff from each of the jurisdictions get together. So we're going to talk a little bit about both what Midway has already adopted and then what Heber City is working on to see if we can come up with some kind of consensus version of those regulations. So the idea is that we would work out any differences between the two jurisdictions, and then all three of us would adopt any of those changes.
Gotcha. It seems like one of the biggest components of those rules is governments trying to decide, should we put in a firm speed limit, you know, up in Summit County, it's 15 miles per hour across the board, versus kind of a best judgment enforcement. How do you decide which one to go with?
You know, I think it's very much a case of pick your poison, right? That there are pros and cons to any approach. And ultimately, I think what we want to do is just be uniform. So that way, if somebody's riding along a trail that crosses through multiple jurisdictions, the rules don't change as you cross those invisible boundaries. So I don't know ultimately what will happen, if we will end up going with a specific speed limit or not, but what we hope to do is at least be uniform in how we apply it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Well, it'll be interesting to see how those discussions shape up. I noticed there's a lot of new trails going in along the Jordanelle East Village area, all the development up there. It seems like a lot of those are friendly to e-mountain bikes. I don't know if you know much about the e-mountain bike usage up there, but have you heard anything about it? Is it becoming a really popular place for trail usage, or are you getting complaints about e-bikes along the trails?
Not just yet. I think a lot of those trails are still under construction, and so they're for most of them, they're trying to discourage public use until it's safe. Sometimes that includes, you know, there is construction immediately adjacent or across those trails. So I personally haven't heard a lot of complaints yet, but I think we anticipate that area to be heavily utilized. And, you know, the state of Utah has kind of base limits of how they operate within state parks. And because these trails will interconnect with those, maybe a similar circumstance where we want some kind of uniformity in how these rules apply.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a tall task when you put together, you know, the state parks, all the different governments, Summit County, Wasatch County, lots to coordinate. Switching tacks a little bit, tomorrow at the Wasatch County Council meeting, you have a public hearing for the Heber Valley Center for Learning. Could you tell us a little bit, what is this proposal?
Yeah, so there is a development out on the east side of the Heber Valley, and along the front of this is along Lake Creek Road. There is a proposed development as part of this. Most of it is houses, but this is a school intended to address the needs of patrons with special needs. So this would be a facility that would provide kind of day programming, education, as well as housing and staff support. It was part of the original proposal, I don't know, a few years ago. And so they have largely completed the housing portion of the project, but now coming back through for approval of this kind of school assisted living facility.
Oh, wow. So it's a combination of like some residential facilities and some, I guess, educational facilities?
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, it seems like the school district fills part of that need. So what gap is this trying to meet? Who's the target audience here?
I think these are people who have aged out of the school system, and so they're adults who still need some level of support. And I think the idea is that these families who live in the community will be able to get the help that they need for kind of some of the gaps in the system that already exist.
Okay. Wow. Well, I'll look forward to learning more about that. What's the council deciding on tomorrow as far as that application?
So I believe this is the conditional use permit that will ultimately allow them to continue through to construction.
Okay, very nice. Is there anything else noteworthy on tomorrow's meeting agenda that you'd like to share with listeners?
No, there's a couple of planning items that came from the Planning Commission. I think those are generally, passed easily and will be supported by the council as well. So I don't expect a whole lot. We will have some department presentations. These will be information about some of the tax records offices in Wasatch County. So if members of the public are curious about how we do what we do when we're administering some of those aspects of the tax system, I encourage people to attend and listen in.
Okay, cool. Good chance to peek behind the curtain of local government. Dustin, the last thing I wanted to ask you about today is an update on the status of the sheriff's office investigation. A little while back, you asked for written info from citizens who wanted to share thoughts. Curious what kind of feedback you've gotten from that inquiry.
So we hired Judge Richard McKelvey to handle the investigation. I know that he's done a number of interviews and has more that he's planning on doing, but I've not been directly involved in the investigation. We largely want it to maintain its independence. And so I don't have a whole lot of details other than I know that there is work being done and people are sharing information so that we can be able to address it when the time is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, since you've hired Judge McKelvey, have you learned any more about the timeline of the investigation, how long you expect it to take or how much you expect it to cost?
So I think because whenever as these processes go, typically someone will share some information that might require follow-up. And so because we are still in this discovery phase of the investigation, I think it's difficult to say a specific timeline just yet. And the cost will be directly proportional to how long it takes. But I expect that we will have a much firmer sense of where we're at in the process in just a few weeks.
Okay, understood. And you've previously told the county council that some of the allegations brought forward had the potential to be criminal in nature. At this stage, is there any additional information you can share about those allegations?
Like I said, I'm not directly involved in the investigation. I know that Cache County has been working on some of those aspects, but they obviously don't provide updates to me on any of those investigations. So,
understood. Well, thanks for those updates. Again, the county council meeting is tomorrow in Wasatch County. Dustin, is there anything else you want listeners to be aware of at this time?
Not today, no.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dustin.
Thanks, Grace.
We've been speaking with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Well, joining us in the studio is Jim Bedell, the General Manager of Recycle Utah. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Grace. Great to be here with you.
Thanks for joining us. Well, it's a busy calendar for Recycle Utah this month. It's Earth Month. Happy Earth Month.
Thank you. Yeah, we love Earth Month. We love April. Among other things, the weather turning tends to make it a lot easier for our operations staff to be outside handling material in the yard. So we tend to be smiling and happy about that. Also, Earth Month is near and dear to our hearts, given our whole organizational mission. So we love this. The only downside to this Earth Month is much like many of the school children have kind of been a little bit exhausted by a long spring and then are enjoying their spring break. Our baler, which is the heart and soul of our whole operations, decided it wanted a spring break. And we've been without a baler for over a week right now, which has really wrought havoc on our collections operation.
Oh, man. So no cardboard.
No cardboard. We actually had an additional issue yesterday with the compactor that we also use to handle cardboard overflow. Our hauler also had some spring break problems and didn't show up to collect the compactor. So yesterday we had to stop taking cardboard. I was at the center early this morning. They did come and collect the compactor. It should be back in a few hours. So we should be able to take some cardboard later today. But we'd certainly ask all of our users, both the small businesses that rely on us as well as residents, if you can hold off on bringing us material for a few days until we can catch up a little bit. We greatly appreciate it. We are open for business. Other items like glass and electronic waste and batteries are fine, but anything that we need to bale or compact, like cardboard, paper, and plastic, please hold off if you can.
Gotcha. Maybe wait till the weekend, next week sometime.
Yeah, we're hopeful. I mean, the baler part was hard to identify, a replacement part for what we needed. It's allegedly on its way to us. It hasn't arrived yet. Once we get it, we should be able to install it fairly quickly, but we really don't know when we'll be back up and running.
Noted. Okay. Well, we'll stay tuned for updates, I guess,
yes,
on the
please.
Baler front.
And thanks, by the way, for the work you guys did yesterday in getting the word out. We had plenty of people who knew not to come because of our capacity problem. So thanks for that.
Oh, good. Good to hear. Well, I want to chat a little bit about the search for a new location for Recycle Utah. You mentioned, you know, last summer is the last summer you'll have at its current home. How's the search for a new spot going?
Yeah, as you said, I think you meant to say next summer. So it's official now that we will be closing down our facility in 14 and a half months to the date, the end of June next year. you know, that'll be a challenge for the community to figure out how we're going to be able to handle all the material we currently collect. I think we've made our proposed solution quite clear, both to the public and to the local governments. You know, we hired experts in the field. We went with them to visit other mountain town communities that have successfully put in place infrastructure to improve their diversion rates, and I think our position is pretty well known. It's now, I think, in government's hands to make that happen. The only thing that's been decided is we will be closing down next summer.
Gotcha. You know, you've been looking at sites along Old Highway 40 as a potential spot. Are you narrowing down a location at all?
Yeah, I mean, this decision's not ours at this point. Yeah. And even as we said, you know, we made our public presentation with the consultants. We know where we think a new facility should be and, you know, location that would be appropriate given what the community needs, but it's not our land and it's not our decision. So, yeah, something that's easily accessible to major highways, either Route 40 or Route 80, is the right type of location. But it's kind of hard for us, Grace, since, you know, we're the nonprofit that wants to try and drive greater diversion and relieve some of the pressures on the county's landfill, but we don't have the authority or the financing to make it happen.
You did hold a bunch of public meetings. What kind of feedback did you hear from members of the public about Recycle Utah's future?
Yeah, I think the first thing which shocked us and certainly shocked people is just how low our diversion rate is compared to our peer communities. And once people got over that initial shock, I think everyone appreciates now that we can make that change. You know, we can change that number. It's not that difficult. What the community lacks is infrastructure. We have the willingness to act. We just need the infrastructure to act. So I think people have transitioned from initial shock to an appreciation that we can do something and need to do something.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some education about things you can recycle you might not have thought of. I recently learned toothpaste tubes are something that can go into recycling. Is that true?
One of the cool things for me, you know, being in an operational role now is just interacting with a lot of people who come in every day, sometimes holding material like a toothpaste tube and saying, can you do something like that? Sometimes we get users who come in and say, hey, you know, my child lives in Philadelphia and they have a program for X. And that's what's led us to do toothpaste tubes, contact lenses, sneakers, women's undergarments. Whenever we find a need and an opportunity to be able to, you know, divert those type of kind of odd and perhaps less frequently used materials, we love it.
That's cool. It's like creativity's the name of the game over there.
Yeah, there are constraints, just to be clear. There
for
are some
sure.
things. For instance, we had a great guy come in the other day with all sorts of old cassette tapes. And the problem with the tape itself is that, for reasons I don't completely understand because I'm not a chemist, something about the chemical composition there makes the tape difficult to recycle. However, you can pull the plastic casing apart and recycle the plastic. So we had a guy who said, fine, I'm going home, and sat and deconstructed his cassette tapes. You know, sadly had to throw the tape out, but brought the plastic back to us. And, you know, that's kind of the fun things we see at the site.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
You're also having a collection day in Colville later this month. Next month.
Correct.
Is that, I guess, how many collections, or I'm phrasing myself poorly, where all do you do collections?
So the Colville thing is kind of a unique opportunity that we stumbled into a couple of years ago as we were looking for different sources of grant funding to allow us to expand the reach. You know, our facility is great if you happen to live in 84060 or come here for business. It's not so great if you live in other parts of the Wasatch Back or Summit County. And we found a program under the U.S. Department of Agriculture that provides funding to help rural communities, and Colville happened to qualify. So we applied for a small grant, we're successful in getting it, reached out to local Colville residents and government, and said, hey, we have funding, it would allow us to do both education and collection events, you know, out in your community, what do you think? And Colville mayor was fantastic. He said, great, we'd love to do it. Why don't you plan on doing as many events as you can on Saturday afternoons? And he suggested very wisely that we focus on collecting electronic waste and batteries, things that were quite difficult for local residents to get rid of. So that was the genesis of this program. We'll continue to do events as long as we can. The funding runs through October. And we've also applied for another series of funding to be able to do similar events in the Camas and Oakley area next year. So with any luck, we'll be able to roll out these programs there.
Cool. So it sounds like you're kind of expanding those mobile collection days.
Yeah, to the extent we can, and reaching further out to other residents of our county who just can't take advantage of our facility given our location.
Mm-hmm. Is there potential in the future to do anything in Wasatch County?
Certainly. I mean, one of the things that we're leery of is spreading ourselves too thin. We're a fairly small staff, and there are great demands. But on the other side, our operating name is Recycle Utah, not Recycle Park City or Recycle Summit County. And in fact, I almost feel like maybe you were spying on me. I was at a meeting yesterday in Wasatch County with the mayor of a local town and two members of the council there who were interested in thinking about, what type of increased diversion activities they could do in their community. So I don't want to raise anybody's expectations, but, we would love to have the capacity, to expand good landfill diversion programs as widely as we can in the county, the Wasatch Back, and ultimately the state.
Nice. Well, you mentioned some of the harder to recycle items in Colville that you're looking for. Household Hazardous Waste Day is coming up.
Yes.
What all can people bring?
I would suggest you go to the website, because if I read you the list right now, first of all, it'll take a few minutes. And also I might inadvertently leave something out. But the key is in the title. The most important thing that we'd like people to bring are those truly hazardous substances. So solvent paints, any sort of chemicals that you have around the household will be there to be able to collect those. So that's, number one. We'll also be accepting electronic waste. The Bicycle Collective is there to take old bicycles. Springback will be there to take mattresses. So I'd encourage your readers to go to the website, where we have a pretty exhaustive list of materials.
Nice. And that's coming up on...
Yeah, sorry. I'd like to add, sorry for interrupting you.
Not at all.
One important thing, that is Saturday, April 26th from 9 to 1. This year it's at a new location. We had been able to hold it for many years at the base of the Canyon Village in the Cabriolet parking lot there. That site is under construction, and the Park City Mountain kindly allowed us to use the Silver King parking lot, which is at the base of the Park City side of the mountain. So once again, you go to our website, see the list of materials. There's also a map, but please make sure that you know that the site has changed for this event.
Awesome. So that's 9 to 1 on the 26th.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Earth Day is around the corner as well. How does Recycle Utah celebrate?
We are excited. We actually have a lot coming up this week. Before I forget and get in trouble with the rest of the organization, most importantly, tonight is Trivia Night down at Park City Brewing in Kimball Junction. That is at 6:30 this evening. Our focus this month for Earth Month is on plastics. So I would brush up on your plastics trivia if you're planning to come this evening and want to win one of the nice prizes we have. So that's the first part of our Earth Week celebration, if you will. Secondly, our green drinks this month will be on Thursday the 17th, also down in Kimball Junction at Fulfilled. And the focus there is on plastics. Once again, there are still openings available there, so please go to the website and register if you'd like to come to Green Drinks on Thursday. And then the big event that you were alluding to is our annual Earth Day celebration, which is on Earth Day next Tuesday from 5 to 8 p.m. at Twisted Fern. And tickets are available still for $45 until Friday, at which point they'll be rising to $60. For those $45 or $60, you'll get some wonderful food from Adam Ross and his group at Twisted Fern, two drinks, and the ability to bid on an incredible range of silent auction products that we have, which run the range from local gift cards at some of our local businesses to ski passes for the mountains, golf tickets, etc. It's a great opportunity to come socialize, have some good food and drink, and walk away with some nice items.
Cool. So people should head to your website to buy tickets?
Yes.
Awesome. And then the next day, it looks like you have a sustainability workshop. What happens at a sustainability workshop?
That is held in conjunction with Summit Community Gardens Eats. It'll be at the library. And our staff plus their staff will be working on programs for all ages. That sustainability workshop is actually from 4 to 5:15 at the library, so appropriate for any children who are in town. And our staffs will be talking about a whole range of composting and recycling issues. Composting is something that's particularly of interest to Summit Community Gardens Eats, mm-hmm. So I expect you'll be able to hear a lot about that.
Very nice. Well, lots of ways to get involved with Recycle Utah this month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jim, anything else you want to add this morning?
No, thanks again for your support. And again, please, for your listeners, you know, keep tuned to the radio to hear a little bit about how our bailer is progressing this week. We greatly appreciate the, you know, kindness that everybody shows when they show up with loads of material and realize that they can't unload it. So thanks for your cooperation, and we'll let you know when we get the bailer fixed.
Oh, well, we wish the bailer a quick recovery. Jim, thanks for joining us this morning. We've been talking with Jim Bedell, the general manager of Recycle Utah.